Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at decodingtv.com. If you want to sign up for ad-free episodes, exclusive early access to episodes, as well as bonus episodes, become a paid member at decodingtv.com. We really appreciate everyone there who's making podcasts like Decoding TV and A Cast of Kings possible.
How long have we been clear of it?
Nearly a mile.
I see.
Do you?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV. I am David Chen.
And I'm Don Marshall.
Welcome to the podcast. On this week's episode of the show, we're going to be recapping and reviewing Season 1, Episode 7 of The Lord of the Rings of Power, entitled The Eye. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, at Decoding TV. Before we get into today's episode, there are a couple of big things we want to discuss. I mean, first of all, I want to acknowledge that last week's episode of the podcast was produced under duress, in that Don had barely had a chance to get any sleep at all. And I think you had to leave for a trip last week, right?
I did. As soon as we stopped recording.
Literally, as soon as we wrapped the podcast, Don like left on a trip. And so he's like... and also we experienced multiple catastrophic recording failures as well. And so if we sounded a little bit hurried or a little bit more frazzled than usual, that's why. But I my respect for Don went up so much last week because he was such a trooper and powered through it. So grateful to Don for rolling with punches last week.
I'm happy to do it.
Want to start that off with some praise, Don, because I'm immediately going to segue into condemnation for Don Marshall.
Fair.
Because here's the thing. On this podcast, over the course of the last 7-8 weeks, we've had a lovely time here talking about the Lord of the Rings of Power, theorizing about what's going to happen with each character and each plot line and so on. And Don has been so careful, so good about preventing any spoilers from getting out into the open. And we always try to like warn you if there's going to be a possible spoiler. But here's a time where, Don, I wish you had shared with me some of your possibly spoiler theories. Because over the course of the last few weeks, Don has been saying, I don't know if Halbrand is who he says he is. I don't know if maybe this Halbrand guy is not on the up and up, is what Don's been saying, right?
Yep.
And and every step of the way, I've been like, I don't know, Don. I think he might be the king who was promised. You know, maybe he is actually a good guy. Well, this past week, Don, I have finally cottoned on to a theory that apparently the entire internet has been discussing, which is that Halbrand... And okay, so before I say what it is, I have to say this is possibly a spoiler, but everyone's talking about it and we have no confirmation of this. It's just the preponderance of circumstantial evidence points to what I'm about to say being true. Okay,
the preponderance of circumstantial evidence. My God, that is legalese if I've ever heard it. Carry on.
Here it is. Adam writes into decodingtv@gmail.com. Adam writes, I was surprised to hear you both pulling away from the theory that Halbrand is Sauron on your last episode, when the theory feels strengthened to me by each successive episode. Here's a quick summary so far. And he has a numbered list here. Number one, Halbrand's second line in the show is looks can be deceiving. Very suspicious for someone who is not Sauron the Deceiver. In contrast with the other unwilling King Aragorn, Halbrand has a streak of cruelty, from pushing off his companions on the driftwood to getting eaten by the worm, to brutally beating up and breaking the bones of the Numenoreans in the street fight, even after they are done with him and walking away. 3. When adrift at sea, Galadriel calls attention to his medallion, of which Halbrand mentions he found it on a dead man. I feel like this is the kind of line they put there to show him being funny or chummy, but really we need to consider that it might be the literal truth. 4. Halbrand's speech about giving people a means of mastering their fears so you can master them feels like a good strategy for corrupting people. I don't think a true king of Tolkien's world would subscribe to this kind of manipulation. 5. When Galadriel tells Halbrand about the mutiny of elves, she says, "They could not distinguish me from the evil I was fighting." Half a second later, rack focus to Halbrand. In the same scene, Halbrand says he's sorry about her brother. It seems like an actual apology. I think what may be happening here is Sauron may have sincerely tried to start over after the defeat of Morgoth, and since he has the ability to change appearance, he intended to disappear in Numenor. 7. Halbrand is very good at making weapons. I remember from Lord of the Rings that the hands of the king are the hands of a healer. We see Aragorn try to heal Frodo after he's stabbed on Weathertop, and later he heals Eowyn at the Return of the King. Again, in Tolkien's world, I don't think a true king's greatest skills would be smithing and manipulation. That sounds more like the skills of a deceiver. Okay, that was just prior to episode 6. Okay? Then in episode 6, Adam writes a separate numbered list.
Okay? Oh, there's more. Okay.
Number 1, Adar says he killed Sauron after having sacrificed so many orcs for his experiments. Halbrand seems to remember Adar, but not the other way around. Perhaps Halbrand was previously in another form, as Sauron would be. 2. There's an incredibly odd moment when Adar and Halbrand are alone after the interrogation. As Halbrand is walking out of the room, Adar asks, "Who are you?" Cut to Halbrand from behind, who pauses slightly, doesn't answer, and then leaves. I feel like this scene wouldn't exist if we were to take Halbrand's identity at face value. So what identity would make for a satisfying reveal? Like Dawn, my backup plan would be the Witch King. But I don't think the Witch King is someone that is revealed. Rather, it is what someone becomes. 3, after the battle, when Halbrand is talking about the feeling he got fighting alongside Galadriel, he says he wishes he could bind it to my very being. That word bind makes me think of one ring to bind them all, and one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness, bind them. It's just too suspicious to be coincidence. Finally, I'm not a makeup expert, but I just feel like they've given Halbrand some very heavy eyeshadow in such a way, to me, he looks almost like an evil Aragorn just until they reveal. Just wait until they reveal his goatee. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, I think if Halbrand is Sauron, it would be the most interesting development for Galadriel's character. It plays into her brother's words, "Sometimes we cannot know which light to follow until we have touched the darkness." Galadriel has been headstrong and determined all season, which we admire her for, but she's also been stubborn and arrogant, and I think she's in for a rude awakening. She basically dragged Halbrand back to Middle-earth, gave him an army, and crowned him king, all because of a medallion that he found on a dead man. How crazy would it be if Gil-galad was right, that the same wind that seeks to blow out a fire may also cause its spread? Thanks, and I hope that makes sense. That's Adam from Philadelphia writing into decodingtv@gmail.com. Boy, Don, I mean, that is a freaking decisive email.
In this TED Talk, I will. Yeah.
That concludes Adam's TED Talk. Okay. So I have so many questions. I really have two questions.
Yes.
You know, Don.
Yes.
Question number one, what do you think of the Halbrand Sauron theory? And question two, why the heck haven't you brought it up until this point in the podcast?
Okay. So here's the thing. I didn't know if Halbrand was Sauron. I had seen smatterings of theories and various arguments to be made one way or the other. And I've seen the Witch King, I've seen Sauron, I've seen the King of the Dead, I've seen so many. And I have now gotten to the point where, and I think after episode 7 especially, I think the theorizing is sort of taking away from my enjoyment of the show. The reason I didn't bring it up is because I wasn't convinced one way or another. To me, there wasn't a lot of evidence until episode 7 for me. Mm. And I'll get into that in a moment.
So literally all the first 6 episodes of evidence that I just laid out was not convincing to you.
I didn't pick up on all of the stuff that Adam wrote. So props to Adam for, you know, catching what I missed.
Yes.
But I think knowing things that I maybe don't even want to mention on this podcast, because of my book knowledge,
yes,
I think I wanted to let Halbrand's storyline play out. Because think about it like this, right? if it turns out that he is actually King of the Southlands and does turn into the Witch King of Angmar or the King of the Dead, sure, it's a rushed storyline. But yeah, you were absolutely right, David. He would be Aragorn 2.0. And if he's Sauron, then it's all of this subterfuge and stuff that, like, one, I didn't have the brain power last week to try and even put together. And two, I wasn't sure. And I wasn't even sure I wanted to theorize about it. However, towards the end of this episode 7, I got a distinctive piece of information that seemed a little bit shoehorned in because, as we've previously talked about, this episode is not my favorite. I do think my theory is that Halbrand is Sauron.
Wow. Dawn speaks the words.
I do.
Decoding TV podcast. Here it is.
I'm sorry it's taken so long. I'm sorry I led you astray. But
you didn't lead me astray. You didn't lead me astray, to be clear. You were the one. You're basically the whole season you've been saying Halbrand is not who he seems. So I just felt extremely silly that I have been going against that all season. but that's okay. That's okay. That's part of what the podcast is about. So
no thoughts, just vibes.
I think before we close off on this one point, I mean, at this moment in time, as we're recording this, we do not have confirmation of that theory, right?
No.
So it may be confirmed next episode or next season. We'll see. I do think that it's a little bit silly if Halbrand is Sauron. It's a little bit like, ha-ha, like big twist, you know, in a sense that doesn't feel completely earned. But I do agree that it would be an interesting development for Galadriel. That is, I'm not like, oh, this is a great idea that they did this, because I do think it's fundamentally silly to spend all season having an extremely rushed storyline with, hey, let's give Halbrand all these resources. And it's like, the whole time I'm like, why are you doing this? And then, oh, it turns out he's evil. It's like, okay, I didn't even want you to give him the resources in the first place. You know, like, that's silly and not great storytelling. But I do agree, good character development for Galadriel, if that happens.
Yes.
I don't know if you have any thoughts on, like, what it would mean for the show if Halbrand is Sauron. I've exhausted we haven't even started the episode. I've already exhausted.
We haven't. No, David, I'm treading on thin ice here because I'm approaching potential book spoilers.
I see.
Maybe I can make an analogy. There are certain things that the audience knows that the characters in this show do not. For example, we know Galadriel doesn't die.
Yeah. Isildur.
That's
as well.
A fact. We know Isildur doesn't die. Right. Isildur is safe. There are certain aspects of this theory that could lend itself to the idea that I'm treading on such thin ice now. Hang on.
Yeah.
There are theories and ideas that people have that are skirting the line between what the characters know versus what the audience knows. Especially in today's modern media, it's very hard to toe that line. And I will say that there is potentially a possibility that the audience may know it is Sauron, that the elves do not.
Mm-hmm. Like there might come a time in the show when the audience realizes it, but the elves don't. And that,
yes.
And do you think that'll make the show more interesting or less interesting? Or
yes, and especially after this episode, I actually did a complete 180, and I actually disagree with a big thing that the showrunners are doing in keeping us in suspense. I think given what we have seen in the first 7 episodes, it would have been more beneficial to know who the stranger was from the beginning, who Halbrand was from the beginning, who Theo and all of these people that could potentially be major key players in the late second age or third age. I also, if they were going to do it the way they have, I think that this show would have lent itself a little bit better to binge watching the way they do Stranger Things. I think the question of who is the stranger has been strung on for a really long time. And yes. While it's been fun to theorize, I think at the same time, if I had sat down for 8 straight hours, taken a Friday off work, and then you and I hopped on a podcast for like another 12 hours dissecting everything, that would have been great. I think the whole mystery box, sort of J.J. Abrams, Pandora's box style, didn't lend itself to the strength of season 1. Now, if they choose to go forward in future seasons no more mystery box. We know who everybody is and we're just watching the events play out. Good. I think that's the right decision. I don't know if they'll do that. And I don't know if we'll get all of the reveals.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. This is also the approach that a show like Westworld took, which this podcast previously covered, which is there's a trade-off between telling the audience who this character is and surprise, right? Because the people they want to, the showrunners, they want to surprise you. Aha, it's Sauron. Aha, it's Gandalf, whatever. Like, they want that moment for the audience where everyone's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. The disadvantage of that approach is the whole time we're watching, we're not focused on what this character's motivations are, because we don't know what they are. We don't know who they are. We don't know what they're doing. Like, we don't know what their purpose is or who they are inside. And so we honestly don't know what we're watching. Are we watching the King of the South return victoriously to Lindon, or are we watching potentially evil force infiltrate Lindon? Like, that's, without knowing that, it's hard to formulate a strong opinion on it.
And I think I will give the showrunners this. They are making bold decisions. Whether or not that lands with the audience, with all of us, you know, obviously not everyone's going to agree on certain things, but I think going forward, the whole mystery box thing was cool, but these bold decisions need to be made with the knowledge that we are in the 21st century. Twitter exists. You're not going to get any spoilers. Tell us from the beginning. Let us watch the journey. Full disclosure, I knew how the ending of Battlestar Galactica happened because I watched the last season with a friend of mine before I watched any of the other stuff. And going back and watching the first four seasons, I was like, I could appreciate the intricacies that much more. And given the intricacies that exist in Tolkien, I have now 7 episodes in. I have come to the conclusion that I think this show would have been 1, better if I could binge it, or 2, better if I had known everything beforehand. Yeah.
Or in my opinion, like some mix of it. Like, you can have like 1 or 2 big reveals, but you know, I think they're just trying to save everything. And we're at the final episode, next episode, you know, and I Weena might not even find out Halbrand's real fate.
No, I think given what I saw in the first 7 episodes, I've kind of had time to think this over. I 100% now think that they are going for a 50-hour story, not 5 seasons. I think they started this from the get-go saying, we know how it's going to start. We know it's in the middle. We know how it's going to end. And that's what they're going for. Now, whether or not that is a good idea or not remains to be seen. Because again, we haven't had all 50 episodes. And if it turns out that the first 8 were just a little rough around the edges, who's to say?
who's to say? Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you to Adam for writing that into decodingtv@gmail.com. A really persuasive email, I thought.
Yeah.
Thank you for making me not look silly or shortening the number of weeks that I look silly by 1 week. Really, really appreciate that. So, all right. You are listening to or watching Decoding TV. I'm David Chen. He's Don Marshall. Let's dive into season 1, episode 7 of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. This episode is entitled The Eye. Last episode, Don Marshall, of this podcast, I said to you, I think I said to you, that depending on how the show handles that big volcanic explosion that happened at the end of season 1, episode 6, we're going to learn what kind of show this is. And I dare say we have learned what kind of show this is.
Yeah.
And it's a show in which there are not that many major consequences for major events that happen in the show, at least in my opinion. Now, I'm tainting the question I'm going to ask you, which is, what were your overall thoughts on season 1, episode 7, Don Marshall?
My thoughts remain roughly the same with a few caveats. This show continues to have stunning music, stunning landscapes, really incredible individual scenes, very poignant moments. In terms of overall story, though, still feel like we're spinning our wheels. Still feel like the cohesive story isn't quite there yet. It could be. I want to make it very clear. If you enjoy this show like I do, I think you look at episode 6 as the potential for what it could be. But there were a few moments in this episode where I went, no, I want more of that. Give me that. And it only happened in tiny doses. And there were a few things that I didn't agree with, but also a few standout performances that cemented the, God, I hope they lean into this way more next season, thought process.
I think this might have been the episode that broke my relationship with this show.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not going to lie. Like, we'll see how next week plays out. I have loved doing this podcast so much with you. This is my first Don Marshall collaboration. It's been a joy and a delight every week to gather together to talk about it. But I found this episode really frustrating. And
yeah,
the big reason is, as people might suspect, the language of last episode, right, is holy shit, something catastrophic is occurring. And we're seeing freaking literal lava rocks like touch down next to Galadriel and just completely wipe out people, and everyone's gonna be, you know, encompassed in this lava rock, and we see a horse on fire running away in the first scene of the episode, and surely some people have died, and probably some of our main characters, but basically no main character died. There was Isildur's friend
Antimo, Antimo, yes, Antimo, R.I.P.
We spent at least like 6 minutes with that character in the whole series thus far. He's dead. The Queen Regent loses her sight, but that's basically it in terms of that set of characters. And Isildur is missing, but like, come on. Here's the thing, Don, I am not a Lord of the Rings expert. Even I know Isildur is alive during Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah.
So it's
Here's what I will say.
Yeah, go ahead.
Putting characters in danger that we know survive, I think, unless we see that person alive again, so like, of course we know, but the show is still keeping us in suspense, we're not seeing what he's doing. I really liked the effect that Isildur's fake-out death had on Elendil, because I think Lloyd Owen continues to shine as this character, and the effect that that had on him is brilliant. I don't, you didn't need it. It was unnecessary.
It's such a weird move. It's like,
yeah, it's weird.
You know, again, I'm a filthy casual. Even I know Isildur lives through this. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, why are you trying to create suspense out of this when we know that he's not dead? So
you could 100% have created suspense out of secondary characters in watching these main characters desperately trying to find their friend. Hell, give Isildur a plot. Sorry, I'm going on my soapbox, but like, all I wanted was for Isildur to go through the entire episode and just like be searching for his friends and not being able to find it and fighting off orcs and like eventually going through all of that struggle only to find both of his friends dead. Right?
Would have been great character development for Isildur. Would have been formative for this character who we know is going to be important in Lord of the Rings, you know? But yeah, anything like that. But I think that at this point, I'm willing to declare, like, thus far, the Numenor plotline is a disaster, in my opinion. Like, it's just the way it's all played out. It's been super rushed. We've barely got to know any of these characters. And then to show us a cataclysmic event that then literally pretty much everyone we know survives, I will not trust. And like, if they try to do this again, I'm not going to trust that it's going to be consequential at all. You know, like,
yeah.
And that's that, you need that for a show. If a show is like showing you, hey, the entire building blew up and no one died, then the next time a building blows up, you're not going to feel like there's anything worth getting worried about. And that lowers my engagement and emotional attachment to the show. I think it was a very bad decision. And the thing is, they could have easily, I was like, oh my gosh, Bronwyn and Arendir killed off. Incredible. Like, that's a bold move. What? Wow.
Yeah.
Except they show up at the end completely unscathed. And I guess they're back. I was also thinking about your words about how there have been no known instances of like elven human couplings. And I'm like, oh, maybe this is how they took care of that. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Hey, riddle me this, David. Wouldn't it have been such a poignant yet tender moment? Cut out all of the Bronwyn torture porn stuff that we got in episode 6. Wouldn't it have been such a poignant moment to see the fallen bodies of Arendir and Bronwyn holding each other as Theo finds their bodies and is whisked away by Galadriel saying, we have to go? What would that do to Theo's character? And now we're like, and I said this last week, there's too many characters. And look, yeah, I say this having
there's too
met
many characters. It's like kill off some characters. It's okay. It's okay to kill off some characters. Yeah. In fact, it's really bold and interesting for the world, you know, to interesting for the other characters. It creates other motivations for them.
Yes.
And yeah, go ahead. Sorry. I didn't mean to
I say this having met almost all of the cast members, and they are lovely.
Yeah.
I've had conversations with them. They know the lore and they have so much fun together. I don't know who I would kill off first, but like, I feel like a choice needed to be made. And yeah. So far, this is again, this whole spinning your wheels thing. I'm like, oh, yeah. Come on. Give me some gravitas.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Numenor plotline is pretty, in a pretty terrible place, possibly an irredeemably bad place, in my opinion.
Okay.
Harfoot stuff is okay. Same thing happens this week as in the past 2 weeks, just FYI. Yep. Or, you know, nothing much either. Freaking Durin and Disa and Elrond are freaking holding the show together with their bare hands, Don. Like, that is by far the best, most interesting, best acted, like, not best acted. I don't want to impugn the performances of the other actors.
No.
It is the plot line that I am most emotionally attached to right now.
Yes. Likewise.
And there's a lot of interesting dynamics going on there that have been like pretty decently developed. But I was crushingly disappointed by this episode, and let's talk about why.
Yeah.
So, before we get into the main event, let's talk about all the other subplot lines. Okay.
Yeah.
Start with the Harfoots. All right. So they arrive at the grove that they're destined towards, and they see that a
chunk of rock.
Yeah,
you wrote meteor. It's not a meteor.
I thought it was meteor too, but it's a chunk of rock from the lava that landed in the grove, killed most of the trees. Now, open question, Don, about how these guys are close enough to get lava chunks falling on them, but they didn't hear the explosion or can't see it. You know, that's a little weird to me.
So we actually, fun obscure Lord of the Rings fact, I made a video about this actually that I didn't notice until after we had recorded. We actually know where the Harfoots are. When Poppy, or was it episode 5? When Poppy sang the song, we get a little map pop up, and we actually see that they travel south down towards the place called the Falls of Rauros, which is where we see Boromir take the boat over the waterfall. And so they're right around there, and they go even further south. So would they have heard it? I don't know how volcanoes work. Is it plausible that the volcano's chunks spewed that far? Sure. They're probably even further south, but I don't know how geology works. So
volcanoes don't work the same in Middle Earth, right? They basically, the rock chunks travel much farther than the sound from the volcanoes in Middle Earth.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a thing we've learned. Okay, so then the stranger's there, and he tries to revive a tree, but it does some spooky stuff. And then they're like, get out of here, stranger. But then it turns out what the stranger did was good. If that sounds very similar to what happens in previous weeks, it's because it's exactly the same thing that happened in previous weeks with the stranger.
Yep.
Basically, is he good? Is he bad? Maybe he's doing bad things, but maybe it's good things. But he's a little bit creepy, and maybe we don't want him around. That's basically the Harfoot stranger storyline. Of course, there are a couple of other nice few touches here, right?
Yes.
What is it that the stranger is saying to the tree to get it to come back to life?
So the stranger says four words. I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but Kuta, Envinyata, Lote, and Kurieta? Again, no idea if that's correct or not. I'm sure someone will send an angry email, but Kueta is like a restore, a refresh. Invinyata means to heal. Lote means flower. And Kueta means live or life. So nice little nod in Elvish there that the stranger did. Yeah. Also, nice little detail as he's saying this. One of the women in the show goes, Saduk, trees don't talk. And Saduk, played by Lenny Henry, go, well, some do. So I have a feeling that we've had old Saduk been talking to some Ents in the past.
All right, we'll see. The creepy people in white robes show up. They're looking for the stranger.
Yep, the mystics. I think I called them the dwellers like 2 weeks ago or something, mm-hmm. but I believe they're called they're referred to as the mystics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they are looking for the stranger, and they seem to be going in the right direction, and Nori pops up and is like, no, he actually went the other way. And there was some confusion. I actually read a recap of this episode that was like, Nori was trying to help them, but I think she was trying to, she senses that they are dangerous and is trying to get them away from the stranger, right?
That was my read on it as well, yes.
And the strangers, the mystics or creepy people in white robes. That's what I'm going to call them. Creepy people in white robes. C-P-I-W-R. The Sipwar.
We'll workshop it.
These a little work. They reward Nori's helpfulness by torching her entire encampment. Now, it wasn't clear to me if they knew that she was lying, you know, and that's why they torched it, or are they just some mystics just want to watch the world burn, perhaps? I'm not sure.
Their motivations remain unclear, other than we need to find this person. So whether or not they are evil for the sake of being evil, I'm pretty sure they are, right? These strike me as servants of Sauron or his master Morgoth, like, right? They're the creepy
people
in white robes.
But you don't know. You don't know, Don, because we've been introduced to Halbrand as the king of the south. So maybe, you know, these people are going to be the good guys. They're going to be like elvish emissaries or something like that.
Don't do this to me. Anyway, that was the entire plot line. There's a speech given by Largo. Sadok says we're all going to die anyway, and they travel to go find the stranger.
Yeah, they go help the stranger out, even though that was the thing that was confusing, is like Nori had pointed them in the wrong direction, but they still think the stranger needs help. Whatever. Stuff's just going on with that plot line. Okay, yep. Let's talk about the Elrond Durin Disa storyline.
The one carrying the show.
Yeah. Yes, the one that is... It actually needs to be taken to the hospital because it's carrying the freaking show on its back, Don. So Elrond Durin Disa, you know, there's more arguments here around whether or not they are going to give the Mithril to the elves. And it's not only, here's the thing, it's not only whether or not the elves can have access to the Mithril, it's whether they will even dig for the Mithril at all, it seems like, is what is going on, right?
Yes, yes.
King Durin is obviously not up for it. And he does not want to risk dwarvish lives to save the elves, because it will be dangerous to dig for the Mithril. And he's like, I don't want to expend dwarvish lives for something that might help, might not, I'm not even sure. This is an interesting kind of dynamic question of like, and certainly, you know, in the real world, we encounter it in many different forms of like, how much do we sacrifice of our own resources, our own lives to help others, you know, for problems that may not even intersect with us, right? Like, right. I think it's an interesting dynamic. But yeah, there's a scene where Elrond is asking Durin's dad, and Durin's dad says, no, I'm not going to let you have the Mithril. Yeah. Any thoughts on this whole sequence, Don?
Peter Mullen continues to be one of the most dynamic secondary characters in this show. As King Durin the Third. Every scene he's in, he brings a weight and a gravitas to, and I think that is part of the reason why, Elrond Durin and Disa aside, this plot line is so strong.
He's one of the great character actors of all time, you know, in this role. So it's just like, you're going to get gold in general with Peter Mullen. So
yeah. Peter Mullen did a great job here. Owain Arthur continues to just shine as well. Phenomenal actor. Like I think his line delivery to me has been some of the best in the entire show, in that like, he's because Durin the king, his father, is acting in the best interest of the dwarves, whereas Durin is trying to save his friend, right? He might see it as, you know, the fate of the elves is in my hand, but what it all boils down to is my friend is dying and my father won't help, and I have the ability to help. And I think those two dynamics at play are one of the more interesting concepts that this show has played with. And I quite like the direction that they're going with this. If the story arc of Moria continues to remain the same, I'd be totally fine, I think, if that stays the course.
Yeah. A couple of other touches in this whole sequence. Elrond knows Dwarvish, which is a shock to everyone. They're talking about him as though he doesn't understand it, but he's learned some of it. The stone tongue, as they call it, right?
Yes. So this is a dwarven language called Kuzdul. We only get a few references to it, even in the books. It is a secret language that the dwarves use only among other dwarves. There are only, right now, two cases of within adaptations of people knowing the dwarven tongue, and that is Aragorn, who we see in the Fellowship of the Ring, because Gimli says a swear word to the elves in Lothlorien, and Aragorn goes, "That was not so courteous." So Aragorn knows a little bit of it.
Or at least he knows swear words in it.
You know? Yes. Yeah. Here's another fun, obscure fact. Gimli says, "Ishkakwi, I durugnul," which is more or less a created for the movies version of "I spit upon your grave." And Aragorn knows what he said. And then this time we are now confirmed, and it doesn't surprise me at all, that Elrond knows a bit of Dwarvish.
So Durin and Disa have a heated conversation about it, because obviously Disa is not happy with King Durin's decision. I'm going to refer to Durin's dad as King Durin. I think that's a good way of denoting it, right? Durin ultimately sides with his dad. They say farewell to Elrond, but Elrond gives Durin the Mithril, like this rock, this tiny stone of unobtainium. I mean, Mithril, sorry. And he...
Hey, hang on. Mithril existed way before Avatar did. How dare you?
I don't know. They're kind of the same. Anyway, he puts it down on the table next to this dead leaf, right? And then the leaf comes back to life. Mm-hmm. So the idea, I guess, is that the Mithril even is able to bring things back to life that are surrounding it, which is not something that we had known before. It can revive previously dead things, right?
Yes. This is, I think, a creative liberty that the showrunners are sort of going with. In any of the books or any of the extended stuff, we don't actually get any like origin story for Mithril. Like the whole Balrog and elf fighting by a tree and lightning struck the tree, and that's a... that's obviously not true. Elrond even calls it apocryphal when we learn that origin. But it's not out of the realm of, you know, the sort of universe that a stone has a magical sort of property, or a mineral has a magical property. So is it my favorite MacGuffin to get them out of a situation? No. I do have a theory, though, and I don't think I put this in the
show
notes.
What do you mean, get them out of a situation? Like, what situation is it getting them out of?
So the Mithril theoretically is going to help the elves, restore their light, right? They'll stop the trees from being infected. It will, their souls won't diminish in the same way that, like, Elrond says Arwen's soul will diminish and just wither to nothing. I think they're going very much for that same sort of idea, right?
Got it.
In my mind, the most logical next step, and again, this is just a theory, the most logical next step in all of this is to create things with the Mithril. And we know that the elves have a certain number of objects that could potentially grant power or longevity to their people. So my theory is that I think this Mithril is eventually going to be used to create the elven rings.
Interesting. So and I think, as you pointed out, like, the different rings might be made of different things, right?
I have previously said that. Yeah.
There's a set of rings for the elves, there's a set of rings for man, and, you know, and then eventually, of course, one ring to rule them all. That one, I think, is made out of the blood of babies, if I'm not mistaken. No, I'm just joking. But yes, the elvish rings might be made of Mithril, and these might be what helps to give them life, is what you're what you're calling right now.
That's my theory.
I will say that I'm a little bit disappointed that, you know, I don't know. Obviously, we're learning what kind of show this is as we go along. But I thought there might be like a more interesting plot line around this forge that they're constructing this season. It seems likely that we're not going to get a really interesting plot line around it at this point.
Nope.
Because they so much time Dawn is dedicated to setting it up. Like, they're like, Gil-galad says to Elrond, hey, I need you to help with something. Here's Celebrimbor, a character you're going to meet whose express purpose is to deal with this situation. And something, oh, maybe throughout the season, we're going to get like constructing the forge and like different moral quandaries that come up with constructing a forge. For a really good example of what I'm talking about, have you seen Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and or Better Call Saul?
I have seen Breaking Bad. I have not watched Better Call Saul.
Okay, well, this is a very minor spoiler for Better Call Saul, but basically, in Breaking Bad, Walter White uses this thing called a super lab, right? Where he like makes meth in this extremely well done lab. There is a massive, multi-year long plot line in Better Call Saul about building that lab. Like, what it took to build it. What it, like, all the steps that needed to be taken to build it, like all the secrecy that needed to, and like all the steps they needed to take to like make sure that no one found out about it. All this, and it becomes like basically a massive plot point in Better Call Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was like overall pretty fascinating. You know, there were some ups and downs, but like overall, I thought it was like a pretty fascinating look at what it would take to do that. And so I thought, hey, maybe Rings of Power is going to do like, what does it take to build a forge? And something went wrong and we need to make a sacrifice to do it. And it's like, nope, literally none of that happens.
Yeah, I think it would have been a little bit more streamlined had Celebrimbor and Gil-galad been honest with Elrond from the beginning. Hey, look, the dwarves have Mithril. We need it. You need to get it. And as you said last week, that's the mission.
Yes.
From what was it? The Top Gun Maverick. You explain the mission, you give him the mission, that's the mission. So everything we see Elrond doing, he has a clear mission. And in this case, it was less clear, right?
Yeah.
And I think it might have been a, you know, we're rewriting it going back.
We're rehashing
now, but
our point that like the show would rather be like, aha, look, reveal, rather than, hey, I'm invested in this character's journey and what they're doing. But what's so strong about this storyline is the acting and the relationship between Elrond and Durin. You really feel like these are characters that have been through a lot together. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And even the three of them, Durin, Disa, and Elrond continue to be, whenever the three of them are on screen together, I'm like, all right, this is going to be good. I'm ready. What do we got? And I think, honestly, I hope they lean into that more in season two. I really hope they lean into that more.
Durin and Elrond start mining for Mithril. And they have a conversation about, they kind of talk about their lives. And this is kind of the stuff that I enjoy from this kind of show, Dawn, you know, is like just folks hanging out, just talking about their life. I really think we needed more of this because we needed to invest in these characters more. You know, the Galadriel equivalent is she's like, we got to go to the Southlands. Got to go to the Southlands. Got to kill evil. Like that's the equivalent of Galadriel. But like in this, it's like, hey, these characters are reflecting on their past, getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. We've learned a lot about Elrond and his family and how he thinks about family. And this is solid stuff, in my opinion.
There's a really easy fix that they could have done for the Southlands plot line. I'll get into that in a minute. But basically, people sitting around talking is, I think, what this episode needed more of.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not get a lot of that in the Southlands, but I quite liked this Elrond Durin scene where we almost get Durin's dwarven name.
I wanted to ask you, is that a secret in the books or is it?
I don't think that's ever something that we know that Tolkien wrote about, but having a secret dwarven language would lend itself to having a secret dwarven name. And so there's almost a 100% certainty that we will see, at least I hope, that there is a payoff in that we see Elrond learn Durin's secret name.
Perhaps. But it was cool. He was about to say it, and then Elrond's like, save it for after we get through this mess. It's a nice touch.
It is.
But then Durin's dad comes in, King Durin comes in, and he is not happy that his son has been acting against his wishes. They have a really intense conversation, and then Durin strips him of his collar thing, which I guess removes him from the line of dwarven kings. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's meant to be symbolic because they find the huge vein of Mithril. So Prince Durin is so vindicated, and then his dad comes along and is like, mm-mm, you're done. Rips the collar off, and it felt to me like he was sort of symbolically stripping him of his birthright, whatever you want to call it, however you sort of feel. But
but it doesn't matter because Durin still has Disa, and they're like, hey, guess what? We're gonna one day we're gonna be running this place anyway. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah,
right?
It feels like they're almost setting up Disa to be like, hey, let's have a little coup. But
she does her best Lady Macbeth impression, you know?
A little bit. Yeah. And wouldn't it be though? And again, this is just me theorizing. Wouldn't it be an interesting kind of situation where we get almost like a Macbeth storyline, in that the Macbeth storyline sort of sunders the elves from the dwarves, in that, you know, the greed and their lust for power and Mithril leads ultimately to a straining of that relationship, because they've done so much to set up this Elrond-Durin relationship. Wouldn't it just be heartbreaking and potentially really good TV to watch that relationship sort of fracture, so that when we watch the movies again or we read the books, we go, oh, the elves and dwarves hate each other and there's a reason why, and we are watching that happen. I also do want to clarify something real quick. Disa's eyes have always been that sort of golden color. Disa is not Sauron. I've seen a couple of Twitter theories that's like, oh, Sauron is many people, and one of them is Disa, and he's tempting Durin. It's like, no. Her eyes have always been gold, and she's just got, you know, and rightfully so, a sort of birthright for Durin.
Is it that much more ridiculous than Halbrand being Sauron, though?
Listen.
All right, fair enough. Okay. Final thing about this storyline, King Durin takes a leaf, throws it into the hole, it falls down. We see basically the same rendering of the underground as we saw in kind of the mythic story that was told about the formation of Mithril.
Mm-hmm.
Lands on the bottom, and then, hey, Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the TV screen. It's the thing that we know from the movies. It's the Balrog. Now, you know, Don, I don't know what this is. Like, is this... are they trying to imply that he's waking the Balrog up? Is the Balrog always just there chilling? Like,
no, so the Balrogs at the end of the first age ran underground so as not to be defeated. So there may be more. Maybe this is the same one. I'm almost positive it is. I don't think the leaf woke him up. I'm going to be honest. I'm pretty sure it was the mining, just in case there was any possibility there.
I mean, it does see the language of the show is leaf lands, Balrog wake. The Balrog wasn't already awake, and then you just saw the leaf.
I didn't read into it like that at all. I think it was more a, hey, remember this? I think they should have just had the leaf burn. I think if they had let the leaf burn, it would have been like, wait, why is a leaf in a giant mine burning? It's not that hot. Are they close to lava? What's going on? It would have been a little bit more foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the what's it called?
It would be the equivalent of the show ending with someone say, "What should we name this place?" and then the words Mordor burn onto screen. You know?
Oh, listen. We haven't gotten to that part of the podcast yet, David. Can we not? I didn't have as much of a problem with that, but like, I get it. It's like, well, are we some sort of Suicide Squad? Like.
That's how that moment felt, and also this Balrog scene felt.
Yeah,
it's the thing, and it's like, okay, yeah. I mean, I sense you're not super enthused about the Balrog's appearance either, and I'm curious, like, why that is.
I think they could have done it a little bit better. I wanted the Balrog's reveal to be epic and grand in the way that it is in both
in the
books and the movies. Yeah,
the movies,
and
right?
Again,
yeah.
I try not to harp on the, God, the movies did it so much better. I wish they had done it this way. I just feel like this particular part to me was too heavy-handed. I would have liked to have seen the leaf burn. And if they were going to show the Balrog, show him start to climb up the Mithril or touch the Mithril and it burns away. Like, give us stakes, not just a...
Hey, it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing.
Yeah,
that just,
yeah,
you
it's
know,
the Leonardo and, DiCaprio pointing.
Right. And I think the show invites the comparison, Don, to be clear.
Oh, it does. It does.
I think the Balrog looks... There are many things we see in Lord of the Rings, the movies, that we then see again in Rings of Power.
Yes.
Some of them look like somewhat similar, like the Elvish homeland, you know, it's like, oh, that's really similar to like what we see in the movies. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the same. Harfoots are like kind of similar to the hobbits, but like not, they're different enough. I think they have all this like different, they're obviously nomadic, unlike the hobbits. And so it's like, oh yeah, okay, they're kind of the same. The Balrog looks extremely similar to how he does in the movies, from my recollection.
Yeah, no, it's almost the exact same. You're right. So it's like,
okay, like you're inviting me to compare how this showed up in the movies compared to here, and perhaps not favorably. Anyway.
Yeah.
That is all the non-Numenorean stuff that happens, non-Southlands, non-Numenorean stuff that happens on this week's episode of The Rings of Power. Don Marshall, before we continue, you want to let people know where they can find more of your work on the internet this week?
Yes, I can be found on pretty much any website that involves social media at DonMarshall72. My main account is on TikTok.
You can find him on Friendster, on MySpace, on
AOL
Plurk.
Instant Messenger.
AOL, MSN Instant Messenger. He's DonMarshall72 on all the current hot platforms right now.
What the heck is Plurk? What is that, a real thing, or did you just make up words?
That's a real thing. It's before your time, though. It's before your time.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
There's a office in The Office, you know, the sitcom.
Yeah.
Ryan, the BJ Novak character, says like he invents a social network called Woof.
And right? It's the name of something else.
It just sends you. It's like I sent you a woof, you know. And it's basically like it's a parody of the fact that like there was a time in, I guess, the early aughts where every weird ass term was a social network. So like Plurk and there, you know, Elo and like all these. There's all these other like weird ones that like never caught on, but. Nonetheless, like there was one that was like, I don't even remember what it was, but it was basically like it was like the equivalent of like a poke. You send someone a poke. Anyway,
that was a Facebook thing.
No, I know. But like it was one that was like just that. I don't even remember what it was, but
oh God,
we're going to get a bunch of like tweets about it's this social network.
Yeah. Anyway. Send us your worst early 2000s.
Yes.
Social media.
Okay. So yeah, anyway, all right. So, Don, where can people actually find you?
Oh, yeah. The whole point of what I was trying to say. My main account is on TikTok at DonMarshall72. I'm also on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as Patreon. And that's more or less it. And look, I get about a dozen or so emails a day about people trying to get me to join their brand new creator-friendly social media account. I'm sorry. I don't care if you verify me. You've got 100 users. I'm never going to join it.
Wow. Jeez. Big timing these social media networks, Don.
No. They're just not big-time social media networks. I just don't have the time to join a dozen different ones. And I don't. I don't have the time.
The ones that Don named, and we also, of course, listen in the show notes. And I just want to say, hey, if you're enjoying this podcast, check out our other coverage of shows like Andor and She-Hulk Attorney at Law. We got some other shows coming up in the future that we're really excited about. And if you want to support this podcast and make it possible for us to do shows like this in the future, become a paid member at decodingtv.com and get some cool benefits as well.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, Don Marshall, let's talk about the other stuff in the episode. Don, I feel like your heart is heavy this episode, Don. Your heart is heavy.
David, I don't have children. And to be perfectly honest, I don't know if I ever plan to.
Uh-huh.
But have you ever watched a TV show where a father or a mother has watched their child do something amazing and then they try and do it again and immediately just sort of maybe you fumble the football on the 1 yard line and or maybe you try and do something really, really great and you do it. And then the immediate next part is just something that could have easily been avoided and done way better. That's how I feel. I'm a slightly disappointed parent. I don't want to knock the actors, the set designers, the anything. Yeah, because
I think to its credit, the episode looks great. This episode looks great.
It looks great. The music is phenomenal. I love the costumes. It's great. They could have done a lot more, and I wish they had, because there were some very easy. Let me give you the first part before we get into the whole like plot of this. Right. Well, no, let's go through the plot.
Hit me. Go ahead.
Okay.
Hit me.
So there's the huge destruction. Everybody on the internet is arguing why Galadriel can somehow survive a pyroclastic flow of lot. Like, shut up. I don't care about that part. Frodo and Sam are in a volcano. I don't care about that part. Theo and Galadriel are in a scene together, and they have such a great dynamic because we've never seen these two characters on screen. Give me more of that. Give me Miriel and Arondir. Give me Bronwyn and Elendil. All of these characters are separated, and maybe one of them is hurt, and maybe one of them doesn't make it to the camp, right? I wanted way more of that dynamic. I wanted to watch these characters that I have grown to really enjoy, right? Even if Amazon did make them up. I enjoy Arondir's character. I enjoy Theo and Bronwyn. I want more of that dynamic where we're mixing things up. And I thought the Theo Galadriel part was great. We finally got to see Galadriel be more than this hard exterior. He's talking about.
I actually completely agree. That was my favorite scene from this plotline. Was the Galadriel Theo? It's like, oh, what we're learning another aspect of this character. Again, it's very similar to kind of the Elrond Durin stuff, where they're just these characters sitting, chilling, mm-hmm. talking, getting to know mm-hmm. them. Like, we needed more of that this season.
We did. We didn't get that, and I was very disappointed.
Well, first of all, they're all separated for reasons. I mean. Forget about the fact that they were literally, you know, 10 feet apart in the last scene that we saw them in. Huge explosions have occurred that killed none of them, other than Ontimo. Can you imagine, by the way, being the Queen Regent? You survive this catastrophic flow, and then you are blinded because of this house that fell on you? Yeah, that's kind of
the fire within the house.
Yes.
Burst. Sure. There was another explosion, which and to be perfectly honest, that was actually the part that I found the most realistic. and that was just coming from my journalism perspective. I have covered enough tragedies that have happened. When the initial, you know, shock happens, mm-hmm. you're going to lose a number of people. RIP Ontimo. but a majority of the sort of casualties happen in the aftermath. You know, someone is hurt and you can't treat the wound fast enough. You can't get them to medical attention fast enough. So I found that to be really realistic to me. But that's
fair enough.
That's
fair enough. Okay. I stand corrected. I think you're right about that. Yeah. I mean, I will say, I'll just quickly reiterate the point that I made earlier, which is that I don't think you can show something like what you saw happening last episode and then not kill off any major characters, because it's clear. It'd be one thing if it was like the fire wasn't that dangerous, like no one died. Like there was some in-universe explanation for the fire not being dangerous. Mm-hmm. That would have been completely fine. It's like, oh, it just looked bad. It wasn't that bad. But it's like, no, we see a horse on fire. We see multiple people die during it. But then to not kill off any major characters, it really does feel like a cheat. It feels like I have lost trust with this show, because you're going to show me a thing and then it's like, oh, well, next time a dangerous thing happens and it's ends an episode, I'm going to be like, whatever. Like, everyone's probably going to survive like they did last. Like, if you keep doing this kind of thing, it loses the trust of the audience that actions have consequences, events have consequences. So
yep.
I'll try not to harp on that too much, but it did really annoy me.
It's a definite that some trust has been lost. And I think for me as well, there's the fake out of his Sealdor's death because the building falls on him. We know he lives.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, we're getting off track.
All good. So, as you mentioned, the characters all separate. Galadriel and Theo have a moment where everyone's, I guess, trying to find their way to a secondary location that they've all agreed upon in case something like this ever happens.
Yeah, base camp.
We see the Queen Regent. She loses her sight. She and Elendil and Isildur's friend kind of go back together, and they have this realization where, that she can't see anymore. And I, at the beginning of the podcast episode, I played this clip, and on the one hand, it was acted and also shot like very beautifully, where he kind of like takes her hand and he's like, "Are you sure you're okay?" But the dialogue felt like kind of hacky to me, where he's like, she's like, "I see," and he's like, "Do you?" And it's like, on the one hand, it's very moving when he takes her hand. On the other hand, it's very silly. The line is like, "Da-da-ch," like, it almost felt like kind of cringy when he's like, "Do you really though? Do you really?" Yeah. Like a pun almost. Like, yeah. Anyway. But what else happens this episode? We talked about the Theo Galadriel conversation, and some major facts are dropped during that conversation, though.
They are. I would love to go into that part, actually, because I found that to be one of the more interesting parts of the episode.
Right. So obviously the biggest fact is that Galadriel used to be married, right? Now, I believe that the understanding was always that she was married during this time frame in the books, but that people were like, "Oh, I guess she's not married in the show." Like, that's kind of what I saw people conclude, is like, I guess she's just not married. This version of her, she's not married.
Right.
Well, it turns out she was married this whole time, Don. So kind of a shock, kind of a weird fact to drop at this point in time. What did you make of this whole conversation? Who is Galadriel's husband? Like, what do we know about him, etc.?
So we actually see Galadriel's husband in the movies. He is Celeborn, the guy that says, "Tell me, where is Gandalf? For I much desire to speak with him." And it's that guy. He's got only a few lines in the entire movie. Doesn't really play that much of a role in the books either. But Celeborn and Galadriel are messy in that Tolkien's established lore for them only exists posthumously. His son, Christopher, took a bunch of his notes, put it together in a book called The Silmarillion, and then we get, an origin story. But there's like four different origin stories for Galadriel and Celeborn. So what I think the showrunners are doing is they are taking sort of the idea that Celeborn and Galadriel's backstory is sort of not set in stone, and creating from it a means to create this sort of warrior Galadriel, who, by the way, I had no problem with. I am quite glad they put her in armor. I think it was very cool and an interesting decision for the character. But I don't think Celeborn's dead by any means. I saw a couple of people theorizing that he is dead. No, I think we're gonna see him either come back in a later season, because elves can be sort of reincarnated. We know that from the books. An elf by the name of Glorfindel was alive in the First Age, died fighting a Balrog, and then comes back. And he is actually the one that saves Frodo in the book, The Fellowship of the Ring, not Arwen. They replaced Glorfindel with Arwen. So it is not out of the realm of possibility to see Celeborn, and I actually think we will very soon.
All right. There's also a scene where Galadriel and Theo are kind of fleeing from the orcs, and it recalls a scene from Lord of the Rings where Frodo was trying to get away from the Ringwraiths, I believe, right?
Yes. So this is actually a really interesting nod that everyone who's like super hates the show is like, "They're just stealing from Peter Jackson." This is actually a nice callback to Ralph Bashke, who did the animated movie. People don't realize that Peter Jackson actually copied Ralph's imagery of the scene where the hobbits are hidden in this little thicket of roots and the Nazgul is above them. It is almost a one-for-one shot comparison from the animated movie to the Peter Jackson movie. And so we see this nice little nod to the those that have come before. We see this nice little nod to the Ralph Bashke movie, as well as the Peter Jackson movie, when Theo and Galadriel hide from the orcs. I thought that was kind of nicely done.
Yeah, so folks, the show is not copying the movies. Both the show and the movies are copying from something else, okay? Like, mm-hmm. just at least get your accusations in order, all right?
Yeah, if you're going to insult me, do it properly. That's a line from Monsters, Inc., I think.
Elendil and the Numenoreans arrive back at the camp. There's a scene where Elendil is trying... They're all going back to Numenor, right? They're trying to... And the Isildur's horse won't join them. Mm-hmm. Beric is the horse, won't join them. And so Elendil's like, well, I guess we got to let you go. And then Beric gallops off into the distance, probably to go help Isildur's, I guess.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to have one of those. Aragorn gets rescued by a horse in the Two Towers parallels as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Theo and Galadriel arrive at the camp. And he's looking for his mom, and I'm like, and immediately when this scene began, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're gonna find Arendir and his mom, like, because in general, when they show a scene of someone like looking for someone in a thing, they don't do that scene unless, in general, sometimes it happens, but like, they don't do that scene unless they're gonna find the person, right? Because they spent so much time on it, they're like, this person who's like missing a leg, and this person who's missing half their face, and this person who's missing a torso, and it's like, okay, you're showing us all these because eventually we're gonna find Bronwyn. And in fact, they showed up. No real satisfying explanation for how they survived everything or any background about any of that, but they're alive, so that's what matters. I don't know if you have any more thoughts on that, Tom.
I don't have thoughts or vibes, David. Yeah. This was just, I was like, oh, okay, good. They're alive.
Oh,
what is that? Nice. What does that mean? What is it? It's like, okay. All right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Anything else about this sequence? I mean, there's a big confrontation between Elendil, Muriel, who is now blind, and then Galadriel shows up, and they kind of hash out what their next steps are, right?
Yeah. So the Southlander people, they're going to go to Pelagir, which is a actual place in Middle Earth. So they're going to hang out there. Muriel actually has a really great line that I quite liked to Galadriel. Do not spend your pity on me, elf. Save it for our enemies, for they do not know what they have begun. For I, Muriel, daughter of oh, God, I'm going to mispronounce this so badly. Anyway, I, daughter of Inziladun, vow this Numenor will return. And this is where I really think that Lloyd Owen just is acting circles around anybody with long hair looking like a scruffy man. Just like phenomenal scene from him. I really enjoyed his reaction to that. Like, oh, God, I've lost my son. I've lost my wife. My son's friend is dead. My people are basically in the midst of a pseudo civil war, but thought of the mind kind of stuff. And also Halbrand's alive. Surprise.
Well, we should also point out that like Elendil is bitter against Galadriel for what he thinks is the death of his son, but we know his son's not dead, so there's no tension in that storyline at all. Like, but yeah, you know, that's a thing that's happening.
Yep. It's a thing that's happening. Things are, here's what I will say. Things are happening, David. It's
very accurately said, Don. Nicely put.
Thank you.
Okay. And as you point out, Halbrand's alive and he needs elvish medicine. So they're going to bring him back to Lindon. So he and Galadriel, you know, he's like clearly wounded, but he and Galadriel, they gallop off into the distance heading to Lindon. And everyone's like, hey, you know, strength to the king. This guy
strength
we just met 10
Southlands.
Minutes ago. We met this guy 20 minutes ago, and now we want him to be okay. And hopefully everything, it's going to be smooth sailing for Halbrand from this point forward. Okay, you had said that this episode confirmed for you that Halbrand is Sauron, the theory. Like, why? Yeah. And something towards the end of the episode. Are you able to say without spoiling? Or
there is a potential spoiler. I need to think about it. Hang on.
Yeah. Yep.
Might be a book spoiler. Yes. It is a spoiler. Uh-huh. I am going to try and do my best.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to hark back to the beginning of the episode in that Adam laid out a brilliant, brilliant argument.
Yeah.
And something that happens at the end of the episode confirms it for me. And I can't say more than that. I'm sorry. I don't want to spoil it.
No worries. But suffice to say, like, at this point, you are now certain that Hal Brand is Sauron.
I wouldn't say certain. I would say here's what I will say. I made a bet with a couple of friends of mine that if Halbrand isn't Sauron, I would change my name on TikTok to Don Marshill, because people have been calling me Shills because I enjoyed this show so much. But I am now certain enough to say that there's no way I'm changing my name.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, if you think Don Marshall's a shill, just listen to this podcast.
Yeah, seriously, this episode especially.
I think Don has been very reasonable about his praise and his criticism coming from a book reader perspective. So, but anyway.
Yeah.
So you are now sure of it, and it's like, okay, well.
I am.
I don't think we need to rehash what we said at the beginning of the episode, which is, again, just pointing to the trade-off you have between surprising people and getting them more attached to the character and what they're doing. Like, we can't really relate to Halbrand right now because we don't know what he's going through. We don't know what his inner life is because we don't know who he is. Mm-hmm. But if he is Sauron, I guess we can start putting the pieces to that together next episode. The big question for me is, are they going to reveal it next episode, right? Probably would be a decent kind of end of season one reveal.
Yeah,
I will be pretty surprised if they don't reveal who the Stranger and Halbrand are by the end of next episode.
I think more so
for the Stranger, because the Stranger is an explicit mystery that's been set up for the whole season. We have no reason to believe, if you're just a show watcher and you're dense such as myself, that Halbrand is Sauron. So, like, if they don't reveal that Halbrand is Sauron, then it's like, okay, that's fair game. They might want to save that for later. But I do think that it will be pretty not cool to not reveal who the Stranger is by the end of the season. That will completely exhaust my patience with the show, I think. I agree.
And like you said, David, you, when we first started this podcast, said, I want there to be payoff for each season, and each season to sort of have a story. I really hope we at least get that for the Stranger. I can't guarantee it for any of the other characters.
100%, 100%. I'm not assuming it for anything else at this point, but, like, I feel like the one mystery that they have to pay off is the Stranger, or else they're kind of like, I don't know. I guess there have been shows that, like, you know, like Lost, for instance, or things like that, where they set up a mystery and they don't solve it by the end of the first season. Like, that stuff definitely does happen. But
did people enjoy the ending of Lost? I seem to remember there being, like, a Sopranos level confusion for the ending of Lost.
I think it is a highly polarizing ending. I think people initially didn't, but have since looked back on it with more positivity. But okay. I'm just talking about, like, I'm trying to think of an example where, like, in the first episode of a show, or the second episode of a show, you set up, like, hey, who's this person? And then by the end of the first season, we didn't find out who that person was. Like, I feel like that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
I want to be reiterate. I don't think the show has done that for Halbrand. I don't think the show has been like, hey, who's this Halbrand guy? I don't think it's done that. You and I mean, me coming late to the party and everyone else on the internet has been curious about who Halbrand is. But so we'll see. Now, okay, I guess that segues us to the next topic, which is, before, as we close out here today, which is, what are we hoping we're going to see by the end of this season? We have one episode left, Don Marshall. And obviously we just talked about, okay, they better resolve the Stranger thing to some degree.
Yep.
Anything else that you are hoping for next episode?
I wish we had three more episodes, or I also wish that season one would have ended as episode six ended.
Right, and then during the offseason, they could have actually decided to have the courage of their convictions and kill off some major characters. But yes, why do you wish that? Why is that?
I think ending on a sort of bombastic, no pun intended, ending like the eruption of Mount Doom would have been a very strong way to end it. I mean, look at the hype that was around the last episode. It was mostly positive. There was a lot of talk about the show in general. And I don't know how they're going to end it. I think we will see who the stranger is. We will probably find. God, this is going to seem really harsh. I'm trying to temper my expectations. I don't know what's going to happen next. And to be perfectly honest, I don't necessarily care to wonder what happens. Okay. I think I'm just along for the ride right now. That is not to say I will stop watching the show or I think it's bad. I am still quite enjoying it. But I think after this episode, I'm like, okay, we're in this for a long time. Because it's not like the crazy season one finale, like, oh my God, did you see that? You have to watch it. But this is very much I don't see what twist they could pull to make the ending be as exciting as episode six. And not necessarily that they even need to like that. It could just be sort of like the ending of the Two Towers where it's very ominous and Frodo and Sam are still walking to Mordor. It's like the music comes in. It's all very eerie and spooky. I feel like that's how we're going to get the ending of this season. And again, I give it to the show. They're making bold choices. I just happen to disagree with a few of them.
All right. Here is my prediction. I think we're going to figure out who the stranger is next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to save the Sauron, Halbrand is Sauron thing. I think there's at least 50% chance that that reveal happens next week and that it is the reveal that closes out the season. I think that what my sense is that the showrunners are like, ooh, like no one's going to, we're going to put in all these hints, but that like the vast majority of the audience is going to be stunned. And so they're going to save it for the very, like literally the last 2 minutes of the episode is going to be Halbrand is Sauron. Dun, dun, dun. Oh my God. What a shock that we never saw coming. You know, like I think that's kind of the hope that they're the reaction that they're hoping for next episode. The Harfoots, the thing is, this is a weird episode. Usually it's very normal for an episode to have a big season to have a big event and then like there'd be a denouement episode. But this episode was really, it's weird because you just don't know where like what's gonna happen with the Harfoots, what's gonna happen with the Durin Elrond thing that might be satisfying, you know, like unclear. I don't know. I feel like we're probably gonna leave those stories in media res. Although we will find out who the strangers are, so like there's going to be some resolution to Harfoots, but and probably my guess is for the Elrond Durin storyline, they will have either figured out a way to get the Mithril or have some path back to it. By the end of next episode. That's my guess. So those are my calls. I'm calling them right now. I'm just being like,
I'm hearing you.
You know, and we'll see next episode. If I'm right. Of course, I thought Halbrand was a normal dude. So, like, you should not listen to anything I have to say.
David, you're a podcaster. That's the worst thing you could have possibly said in that moment.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Decoding TV. More episodes can be found at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Follow us, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, at Decoding TV. He is Don Marshall. I am David Chen. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week for the season finale of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.